Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This week, our guest, Patrick Novakovsky. You may know Patrick from his writing in various places, blogging in some spots. Where do you blog?
I blog at thepretorium.com.
Right. I knew I'd seen that.
I started that blog myself.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. And then you also write for other Catholic publications all around.
I've written for other publications for probably the last 15 years, yeah. But primarily for Legatus magazine right now.
Right. So that is where you are most well known to people as the head of Legatus, Legatus magazine. Did I get the name of the magazine right? Legatus magazine. Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, because if you say you're the head of Legatus, then they think I'm like the president.
Right.
I wouldn't want to step into those shoes.
So
big shoes.
Well, maybe we should start right there. How about tell us about Legatus? For those who don't know what Legatus is, the organization.
Sure. Here's the elevator pitch. Legatus is a membership organization of Catholic business leaders. We have 95 chapters across the country. The chapters meet once a month for Mass, first confession and rosary, and then Mass, a social time, and then dinner and a speaker. So essentially, it's a date night with your spouse, a spiritual date night for your spouse, for people who own businesses, presidents, CEOs of businesses, to bring them together to help them to grow and deepen in their faith in order that they can put that into practice in their families. First of all, we want them to learn their faith and to deepen in their faith and to become missionary disciples, and then to put that into practice at home especially. We exist to help strengthen the marriage of the business leaders. And then they put that into practice in their business and in their communities, because these are people, A-type personalities, who are really the makers and movers and shakers in their diocese, in their communities, sometimes in their state, people that are very well connected, who have a lot of influence. And if they get the faith right, and if they understand the faith at a deeper level, good things are going to happen.
Right.
So that's what Legatus is. Legatus is a Latin word for ambassador. It comes from 2 Corinthians 5:20, which says we are ambassadors for Christ. And matter of fact, the name, Tom Monahan, who founded Domino's Pizza, is the founder of Legatus. He got the idea after meeting John Paul II on May 7th, 1987. He came out of that first audience with the Holy Father, and it was like a light bulb went on.
Yeah.
He said there should be a he was a member of YPO, Young Presidents Organization. And Tom had just turned 50 at that time. And, so he was kind of not young anymore and being asked to step out of the organization. And he thought there should be something like this for Catholic business leaders.
Yeah.
So having the wherewithal and the funds to get something substantial going, he did, and he persevered. And 30 years later, here we are.
And I wonder if about getting CEOs, business owners, top officials of corporations together, is it really thick with, people wanting to do things their own way? Or is there a tempering of that?
I think there's a tempering of that because they're with their peers. There's one thing about Legatus that's relatively unique to Catholic organizations. It is a solicitation-free zone. So when these business leaders get together, and many of them run Catholic apostolates, and they're always asking for help. And another substantial portion are relatively wealthy people, millionaires and billionaires, I guess. And it's not like all of our members are wealthy. Many of them are. Many of them earn less than I do, and I earn a decent salary. So they're not all wealthy, but most of them get solicited for helping with the Kinsmen Club or helping with the YMCA or helping with, a women's shelter or something. They're always being asked. Well, in Legatus, within the forum that we've created, that doesn't exist. So they can, in a sense, it's a safe zone.
Yeah.
What do they call it today? A safe space?
Safe space, yeah. Space for CEOs.
Yeah, it's a safe space where they can go and kind of let their hair down, I guess, and not have to worry about that kind of thing. And that allows a great deal of bonding among these people, and they get to be best friends, and they do come up. Legatus has no project except our members. Our members are the project. Mm-hmm. We're working on making them the best version of themselves, so to speak, right? And then from there, they can step outside of the Legatus organization and forum and chapter and do great things. And they do. They get together with their fellow legates, and that's what we call mm-hmm. a member as a legate. They get together and they do great things together. They form organizations and partnerships, and because the trust level is so high. I mean, if you want to do business with somebody you can trust, and if they're a member of Legatus and you get to know them, you kind of like, this is a person that I can work with because yeah. I know that I can count on them, and vice versa.
Well, you know, it seems that in much of society, we see this process of kind of de-Christianization. And maybe you could go back to the 40s or 50s or 60s, wherever you wanted to pinpoint that happened. Is that also the case in business, that there's been a kind of de-Christianizing of business, that where at one point it might have been seen as a great asset to be, you know, a involved in your church and all that? Now maybe that's irrelevant or even not so welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the case?
I think so, to an extent. I mean, business is based on trust. If the trust falls, then the business will not flourish, you know, because mm-hmm. who wants to do some business with somebody who's not going to pay their bills or is going to renege on a contract? You know, there has to be a level of trust there. And the studies that I've read, businesses that are run ethically and morally are the most prosperous. They grow and they flourish. The yeah. ones that where they kind of cut the corners, not so much.
Right.
So, there are the Enrons of the world where
right.
there's a lot of
fraud, basically.
Fraud, yeah. And yeah. And you see those companies collapse.
Yeah.
You know, their stock dives and they just cease to exist. So there needs to be a certain level of Christian ethics, I suppose, in yeah. business. It just comes with the free market. I mean, it's necessary. But then you see also, what do they call it now? Sarah Palin had this term where there's political influence on business, and it's
I'm totally blanking.
It'll come to me after we
yeah, after good after we, this interview. We'll after the we'll interview, post I'll, a follow up.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I suppose there are great thinkers all the way from Max Weber through today, Michael Novak, who my understanding is he's quite ill. Is
Michael, that... yeah, he has terminal cancer. Matter of fact, he's just – Michael was a good friend. He was my neighbor when we lived in Ave Maria, Florida, and they've just taken him out of the hospital this week, as a matter of fact, and he's at home with his family for hospice care.
Well, we'll have to keep him and his family in our prayers.
Absolutely.
My point, all the way from Weber and up through people like Michael Novak, there's this sense that – business, the way modern business and modern economies work, it's rooted in culture, and that culture that's rooted in Christian kind of self-restraint, principles of self-restraint and honesty and charity and all that, that's the ground in which business is able to flourish.
Absolutely.
And maybe that ground is being undermined a bit in our culture. I wonder what you think about that.
I think so. I think there is. You know, we mentioned the Enrons of the world, and
right.
and you know, there's certainly the collapse, economic collapse in the recession through 2008 and onward. There was a lot of dishonesty in banking, in the mortgage crisis, that led to everybody being affected.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
Now, if there would have been integrity there, that wouldn't have happened.
No, right. This is a boom bust cycle.
Yeah.
There's a fundamental dishonesty that happened.
Absolutely.
And it was on a mass scale.
Sure.
And and those things are very dangerous. They function to the opposite, to the detriment of those who.
And here's my example, my personal example. I had a mortgage, and this is 2006, 2007. And we were looking at selling our home and getting into another home. And my bank approached me and said, we'll finance your loan for another $300,000. And they approved it before I'd even sold my home. And they were going to let me have two mortgages, which would have taken about 90% of my salary.
But they were okay with it.
They were okay with that.
Because they were going to sell the mortgage anyway.
Of course.
Yeah, right. That's the fundamental
of course.
Level. Right.
And so I understand how that happened, because there are a lot of people who would jump at that. Sure, I'll take it.
Yeah, right.
And then they dump their home and walk away from it and carry the one mortgage instead. And then the bank or whoever they sold it to will take the loss.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of loss being taken, and hence this is what happened.
Yeah. But now, so it's not just an ethical thing that your members get in Legatus.
Right.
There's more to it.
It's
than a
that. Fundamental understanding of what the church teaches on every issue. You know, we dive into the catechism. I mean, the primary way that we help our members to grow in their faith is through the speakers that they have at their chapter events every month. And over the course of years, they're hearing speakers like Curtis Martin, like Tim Gray, like Edward Sree, people, George Weigel.
Those are all Orange County people. I think you just named all Orange County people right there. Maybe not. I don't. But there was a good part of Augustine Institute.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've been on my mind lately. Yeah, okay. But George Weigel, he speaks at our chapter events. People like that. And yours truly,
yeah,
who come into the chapter meeting and speak about things that will help them to understand their faith on a deeper level.
Yeah.
And with our magazine, that's another part of it. We try to have it as a teaching vehicle for our members to help them to see the world through a Catholic lens that they're not getting from anywhere else.
So you say you get a member who came maybe because the spouse said come, or, you know, oh, I got invited to this. I'll give it a try. And then a year or two later, they're still coming. What are they saying to you they're getting out of Legatus?
Sure, yeah. They're getting friendships of people of high integrity and people who are basically doing the same thing that they are, leading businesses, and they have questions. They have problems that come up at work that they need to go to a peer to ask questions of. So they're finding help for running their businesses. They're finding people who we have members who are older, you know, retired CEOs in their 70s and 80s. We have younger CEOs in their 30s and 40s, and it's a neat mix of young and old, experienced and inexperienced, and it really becomes kind of a dynamic thing unto itself.
That is, that's really something. And you're at how many chapters now? 90?
95 chapters. We're hoping to hit 100 next year.
And United States, international?
We're across the United States. We have 94 of those chapters are in the United States.
Okay.
Our international chapter is Vancouver, Canada.
Oh, wow, you really went far afield there. You need to get one in Rome so you can go visit them. You know, like you could go give talks and stuff.
Every once in a while, the Holy See calls and says, you know,
it says, Patrick, we need you over here.
We need you over here.
Oh, that's a great deal. I'm glad. I wish I would get that call. So I wanted to get into you with you beyond Legatus a little bit about you've worked in the media. You now are the head of this magazine. I wonder what your impression is about Catholic media and what our contribution is in general. Like, where are we right now?
Well,
with Catholic media
is changing so quickly. When I began my career in 1992, working for a Catholic newspaper, there was no real internet presence at all. I mean, the internet hadn't even been, maybe it was born by then, but there was.
Yeah.
You know, newspapers, every diocese had its Catholic newspaper.
That's it. It was a newspaper. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how the institutional church communicated with the people in their diocese.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that news took, you know, 2 weeks to get to you if it was a weekly newspaper. Something happens in Rome. The Pope says something. It gets, you know, filtered down through Catholic News Service, which was at that time really the only English language Catholic News Service.
Yeah.
Gets to the newspaper, gets printed, gets mailed, and by the time you read it, it happened 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Catholic radio was non-existent in 1992.
Right.
And, you know, there was no internet. So over the course of is that 25 years?
It's starting to feel like a really long time ago as you talk. I'll tell you while you do the math in your head.
Yeah, no, it is 25 years.
At the time, I was the editor of the Southern Cross newspaper, the diocesan newspaper here in San Diego, and I can remember registering the southerncross.org as an internet-like thing, but thinking, well, somebody in the future is going to want this. You know, someday we'll have a website. But it just seemed so, like, far away. It didn't. But now it's – so you were saying it's very, very different.
It's very different. Yeah, matter of fact, it is 25 years. My graduation was May 11th. It was my dad's 55th birthday. And that for me, that's only 7 years away before I hit 55. So it's – Yeah, kind of puzzling. But yeah, Catholic media has changed so much. I mean, we are so, the news cycle is now 24 hours a day,
yeah.
even with the Catholic news cycle. I mean,
right.
you know, with Catholic radio and the internet, the Pope says something and 2 hours later, or even instantly, right. you're hearing what he has to say. You can tune into Vatican Radio online,
right?
Listen to a live broadcast. EWTN carries that. And you can hear it on your phone. You can hear it in your car, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Instantly. And instead of that 2 week lag. So, I mean, part of that is great because, you know, we as Catholic consumers can know what's going on quickly. But part of the challenge is that reaction or misinterpretation of what's
yes.
been said
right.
Is also rapid. And And that, I don't know that that's such a great service to the church,
right.
for Catholic media to react and overreact to
right.
to what's going on in the culture. I think sometimes there's you're better to have a bit of a lag to absorb it, to ponder it, to pray over it before, especially anything of controversy,
yeah.
that you can, you know, communicate that in a way that's a little more. Nuanced, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And maybe familiarity breeds contempt a little bit.
Right.
In this, I mean, sometimes the reporting out of the Vatican is, you almost want to call it Real Housewives of the Vatican or something. It's
right.
all this interpersonal stuff. And that's not really helpful to us at all. Like, when I think, oh, this cardinal likes that cardinal, what does that do for my faith life? Nothing.
No.
So you don't just publish the magazine though. You're online. So how do you
right.
how do you think about that balance?
Well, our primary vehicle for communicating to Legatus is our monthly magazine.
Mm-hmm.
We have been publishing 10 issues a year. We're going to be publishing 12.
Oh, congratulations.
Stepping it up. While most yeah. publications are scaling down,
way,
we're ramping it up. So, but I also publish a weekly newsletter to our members, giving them kind of a snapshot of the news this week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called the Legatus Insider. And many of our members kind of really feed on that because it gives them, in one page, kind of a look at what's going on in the world for people of their, you know, influential people to know yeah. about. Everything from entertainment to what's going on at the Vatican, to the culture, to the Supreme Court, to U.S. bishops.
Right, right. And so you don't feel like one cannibalizes the other. You don't feel
no.
like the internet presence cannibalizes the magazine.
No, I think because they're two different animals.
Yeah.
You know, one is kind of a snapshot. The other one is kind of a broad brush. You know,
mm-hmm.
and we do publish most of our articles online at legatus.org. That's legatus.org.
And well done, Patrick.
Thank you. most of our primary content is online for public consumption. And again, what we try to do in the magazine is to give our members what's going on in the world from a Catholic perspective and to also reflect back to them the good works that they're doing in
yeah.
order to
oh.
inspire them.
Yeah.
To do great works. For example, coming up in our March issue, we're profiling Kristen Hawkins, who is the president of Students for Life of America. She's a millennial herself and president of a substantial organization that is making a big difference in the culture. So here's a young lady who's maybe 30, maybe. She's got a number of kids. She's a convert to the faith. And has grown Students for Life since, goodness, I think 2006 she took over. And they've gone from a dozen campus groups
yeah.
to well over 100.
God bless her.
So she's rallying young people to the pro-life message. And it's really stands in stark contrast to Planned Parenthood, who's really losing this generation. This is a pro-life generation.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
And the media is not going to tell you that. You're not going to hear that on CNN or Fox News, even though actually Kristen is pretty much a regular on Fox News now. So she's getting the message out even into the secular media that this generation of kids is far more pro-life than their parents or their grandparents even. I mean, if you look at the March for Life in D.C., it's primarily millennials. And so that's one
right.
story of a Legatus member who is doing incredible things in the culture, moving the needle in the right direction
yeah.
and holding her up as you know, an inspiration to the rest of them. This is what can be done.
Yeah. So you share those stories.
Absolutely.
Each month you're sharing stories of members of Legatus who are really taking their legate role, that is an ambassador for Christ, very seriously and doing things in the world.
Absolutely.
With it. Yeah. And I wonder how much Legatus has any cross-pollination, because some of it sounds similar to me with Opus Dei, because of the sanctification of the workplace or the, you know, bringing the Christ into the workplace.
Absolutely. There is a lot of we draw a lot of inspiration from Opus Dei. Now, not directly. We have no affiliation with Opus Dei. I do know that a number of our members are Opus Dei affiliated personally. And take that as their spirituality, and it really helps them to be a Catholic at work in a different way. And so certainly there is that as well.
But you don't get the conspiracy theories that they get, do you? Or do you get Legatus conspiracy theories?
No, we have not had an albino monk in Legatus, but I'm sure Dan Brown could.
Nice Dan Brown reference, yes.
There are a number of internet theories that Legatus was responsible for bringing down the economy in 2008.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, because somebody tied the date of one of our national conferences. Oh, no, it was our Rome pilgrimage.
Yeah.
So apparently we all put on our pointy hats, and no offense to any bishops out there, different pointy hats and tinfoil hats, I guess, is a better expression.
Okay. Yeah. And got in your black helicopters.
And got in our black helicopters and conspired to bring down the world economy. So, we do get those, but they're usually internet kooks that.
Yeah, right. Which are now media celebrities. Every internet,
but part of me really wishes that we were organized enough
to be able to bring
to be able to influence the world economy. Gosh, wouldn't that be good? But we'd be pushing it in the right direction.
Yeah, right.
Trust me.
Yeah. So, do you ever get from Legatus members a sense of it's hard to bring Christ and be the disciple of Christ in the workplace, in the marketplace.
Yeah, no question. No question.
That's a struggle.
It is a struggle, especially in certain areas where there isn't a predominantly Catholic presence. You know, we have a big Catholic presence in Orange County. We also have a large Catholic presence, I mean, a Legatus presence, I should say, in Orange County. And we have four chapters. We have four chapters in the Baton Rouge, New Orleans area.
Right.
Now, South Louisiana is predominantly Catholic. So for them to put up a Sacred Heart in their business place or an Immaculate Heart of Mary or a Divine Mercy image, nobody's going to look twice. But for somebody in, say, New York City or in a Manhattan office, and you've got a Divine Mercy image, people might have some kind of a backlash to that. So, I mean, but it is, I mean, because, you know, these are people who are working in the world,
right,
who are trying to be Christ to others. And yeah, there are challenges. One of the things that helps strengthen them is this monthly get together that they have with their peers. We also do have pilgrimages to Rome every year. We have our annual conference, which we just had the end of January in Naples, Florida, where 500-600 of our members get together. And Tom Monahan, our founder, likes to refer to it as the world's biggest Catholic pep rally.
Oh.
And it really is, because it's a shot in the arm to these men and women who are out there fighting the good fight every day and, can come home a little dejected. But when they get together with their peers who celebrate the faith and really want to integrate that into every aspect of their life, it's really uplifting.
Yeah, it sounds like it. 500 people in Naples, Florida. So can I come to the next one? It sounds good. I mean,
yeah.
I always try to get myself invited to stuff. So forget, just ignore that.
We do have one planned for Southern California.
What?
Yes.
All right.
But that will be, let me think, this is 2017, so 2018's in Orlando, 2019.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think I can clear the decks in 2019. I think my calendar might be pretty full, but I could probably.
It's at an undisclosed location, but I'll whisper it in your ear later.
Okay. Now, when you go out and do public speaking yourself, among your themes, Pope John Paul II.
Yes.
Fatherhood. Men's issues. These are things that you talk about yourself.
Absolutely.
there's – so I – the other things too, Divine Mercy is one of the things you talk about. But those three, they seem connected to me. There's something I think very manly about Pope John Paul II that kind of restirred some of the masculine energies to say, hey, this Catholic thing is for me too among
Absolutely.
Men. Absolutely. And are – do you at the very same moment where I think – the church is just being blessed with brilliant women of every kind in business, and I mean, it's just an avalanche of brilliant stuff and witness coming from Catholic women to a world that I think is really attacking womanhood.
Yes.
So what's the male side of that? I mean, where is the masculine side of Catholicism now? What do you say when you go out and talk about that?
Well, let me start with John Paul II. In 1996. I started working for the Marians of the Immaculate Conception. They run the National Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And at that time, the head of their order had been friends with Karol Wojtyła and teaching with him at the Catholic University of Lublin prior to him becoming a bishop and a cardinal and the pope. So I had a chance to go to Rome, and my boss said, well, would you like to meet the pope? And I said, do you need to ask? So I actually had the opportunity to meet him, kiss his ring four times between 1997 and 2002. And so he had a profound impact on my life. And he, being an athlete, he was a very, you know, masculine figure who changed the world forever. And I think that is what each of us as men are called to do in our fatherhood, you know, whether we have children or not. I mean, we are, as men, we are called to be that type of influence on those around us. And that needs to be fed by our prayer life, by our devotion to Christ, by our fidelity to the church that will embolden us through the Holy Spirit to be the men that God's called us to be, you know, and that is, it's a calling whether you're a dad, I have five children, or whether you're a priest who has many spiritual children in his in his parish or in his sphere of influence, or a single man who is called in a different way to father people, you know, but we can't give what we don't have. So we need to be fed spiritually and emotionally, I guess, through the church. And then when we step out into the world, to be the man.
Well, let me throw a theory – not a theory, but a thought I have sometimes, that sometimes you hear in feminist, maybe even radical feminist circles about what men should – how men should treat women and what men – and I sometimes feel like – I feel like they're describing a Christian man, like someone who would take a woman seriously and would you know, be respectful and
to listen.
Listen and be restrained and be – that's – isn't that Jesus that they're describing?
I think so.
I feel like we're coming around a big circle that comes back to be a Christian man. That's the best thing you can do for the world.
Absolutely. I've said this a number of times, that I think that every Catholic man would step up and be the man that God called him to be.
Yeah.
It would change the world.
Right.
And even if that was just the Catholic men in the United States,
yeah,
and they all did it, the world would change overnight. Because we're called to be a reflection of God the Father, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's the ultimate. That's the model, and Jesus reflects the Father to us. So you know that's our template, and we'll always fall short. No question, we'll fall short every day, every breath we take, we fall short. But do we set the bar high or low? We set the bar very high, and Jesus is our standard, right? Yeah. So that's who we seek to imitate in every aspect of our life. And how do you imitate somebody like that? You got to know him, right?
That's right. You know, I mean, he equips us with these tools, these sacramental tools.
Absolutely.
And that's part that, and that is a big part of Legatus as well. The sacrament, I mean, you're going to, you said confession.
Right. Every program starts with the rosary and confession. And Tom Monahan is very, very strict on, or very insistent that the sacraments, reconciliation, be offered before the Mass at every chapter meeting every month. And for a lot of our members, you know, we're called to go to confession once a month, right? So we offer it for them. They don't have to schedule it. If they're coming to their Legatus events, they have the opportunity for confession every month, no question. And then Mass, they're fed by the sacraments. They're fed by fellowship in their social hour. And then they're fed through the meal that they share. And the speaker, who kind of breaks open the word, I guess you could say. It's not a homily, but it's a talk that's designed to feed them spiritually. So they're getting fed on every level during this two and a half hour event.
Wow. Okay, so now if somebody wants to get in touch with Legatus, says, hey, that's for me, where do they go?
Yeah, sure. Well, the best place to go is our website, legatus.org, L-E-G-A-T-U-S.org. We also have a Facebook presence, easy to find just by putting it in. And our phone number is real easy too. It's 866-LEGATUS.
What nice work there. Yeah. And how about you personally? If they want to know more about Patrick, where do they go?
I have two websites, thepretorium.com, which is my blog, and my personal website, Patrick Novakoski, NoveCosky.com.
You know how to do this radio thing. You've done this before.
Broadcast was my major.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, very, very well done. Patrick Novakoski, thanks so much for being with us here. I want to end, I guess, just by anyone within listening, please pray for Michael Novak. He's made such enormous contributions to thinking about business, to thinking about the Christian faith, the Catholic faith in the public sphere. And if he is indeed on his deathbed, we pray for his speedy entry into the house of the Father.
Let me tell you one quick Michael Novak story.
Please
if
do.
I could.
Yeah.
Michael Novak was the first speaker at the first ever Legatus event.
Oh.
Tom Monahan knew him and asked him to come and told him what Legatus, he had envisioned Legatus to be. Michael took Tom aside and said, Tom, it'll never work. And Tom said, yes, it will. And, Michael came back about a year later and said, Tom, I was wrong. It will work. You've made it work. And he has been a great influence for us on every level. And I just love his humility. So,
He a great, great man and teacher, but apparently a terrible prophet.
Yes, indeed. Not one of his gifts.
All right, Patrick. Patrick Novakoski, thank you so much for being with us on Catholic Answers Focus today.
Thanks, Si.
Thanks to all our listeners. This is Catholic Answers Focus. See, I needed that broadcasting background. I need to slow down a little bit. I am Si Kellett, your host. We'll see you again next week.